Hey, everybody, we're back. We are back with a second part, I suppose, of our Metal Gear Solid, well, I'm going to call it a trilogy, even though it's, you know, two parts and not really necessarily connected. But there are thrills, so it's a trilogy. I'm here on the phone. We've got Ian with us.
Metal Gear!
Yeah. And when we talked last time, we talked, so we tried to talk about, and I'm just going to sort of reset here. We tried to talk about the Metal Gear series of video games. Now, this is a series of games that you don't have to have played or anything to enjoy. They will be spoiled a little, I guess. So the four of you who that would be a problem for, fuck off. And we're going to talk about them within their fictional chronology. Oh, and furthermore, I would say that you don't have to have listened to the first part to listen to this second part and enjoy it.
So we're assuming that they didn't listen to the first part, so we can't really reference that.
Well, we can. If necessary.
Got it.
So we talked about, here are the games we talked about and the years in their fictional chronology that they would have happened. We talked about Snake Eater, 1964, Portable Ops, 1970, Peace Walker, 1974, Ground Zeroes, 1975, The Phantom Pain from 1984, which would bring us to Metal Gear, which was on the NES in 1995. Now, I did find and wondered, Ian, if you'd like to take, I found a couple quizzes that I thought could maybe sort of get us started.
Okay.
One is called Metal Gear Hodgepodge, and it's just kind of the entire Metal Gear series and, you know, questions about it. And the other one,
Metal Gear Hodgepodge, is probably going to be like the title of the eighth game.
Metal Gear Hodgepodge Engines.
Yeah.
And then the other quiz is specifically about bosses, which I thought would be interesting because the bosses in these games are always real nuts. So should we start with Hodgepodge?
Let's start with Hodgepodge.
All right. And if you don't know the answer, don't worry. So here we go. I'm going to start the quiz. In Metal Gear Solid 3, what is the name of the place in which Snake is thrown over a swinging bridge into a canyon below? Is it Chornyj Prud, Rasvet, Jalinovodno, or Dermuchij East?
I think it's the first one.
Chornyj Prud?
Yeah.
The correct answer is Jalinovodno.
Oh.
This is one of the last major events that occurs in the Virtuous mission before the beginning of Operation Snake Eater. After the boss announces her defection to the Soviet Union, she and Snake engage in CQC before the boss throws her beloved disciple into the canyon below.
All right. And she remains pretty good at that close quarters combat, which I've played in Metal Gear 3, and it was like, that was a big deal there, but it was really hard to do correctly.
Yeah.
Like, the controls were weird. So I still went with tranquilizing people, like with the tranquilizer gun, shoot them in the head, and then kind of hide until they fall asleep.
Fair enough. Are you standing near, like, a washing machine or something?
No, the air conditioning went on.
Oh, okay. All right.
I can try to move to see if there's another spot.
Well, if it goes off soon, that's okay.
I can turn it off. Hold on. That might help, because that's probably what the noise you're picking up.
It sounds like a washing machine, but it could be an air conditioner. I don't know.
Let's see. Is it gone?
Yes.
Okay, that was it.
Excellent. Enjoy frying to death. And how hot is it where you are today?
It's actually pretty nice right now because it starts to cool off in the evening, so it's maybe in the, you know, it, at night it gets below, like it gets into the 70s.
Ah, the high 970s.
Yeah, but like during the day it's still pretty warm, but.
Yeah. All right, you ready for the next question?
Sure.
Who is ultimately responsible for orchestrating the San Hieronimo takeover in Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops? Is it Gene, Roy Campbell, Ocelot, or Cunningham?
I think it's Cunningham.
Cunningham. That is incorrect.
Oh.
The correct answer is hard to say because it doesn't. Oh, here we go. It's Ocelot. What better way to find out after the credits roll that it was Ocelot who orchestrated the incident during one of his famous last word speeches? So that's, yeah, that was a thing, is like this character Ocelot is basically an asshole. And at the end of the games, he always has a little chat on the phone with someone that makes you go, what? Okay, who provided the vocals for Heaven's Divide, the main theme for Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker? Cynthia Harrell, Donna Burke, Star Sailor, or Rika Muranaka?
I think it's the last one.
Rika Muranaka. The correct answer is Donna Burke.
Oh.
The theme for Peace Walker was released in 2010 and blew the roof off in terms of video game themes, making it arguably the best in the entire franchise. Cynthia Harrell voiced the lyrics for Snake Eater and Calling to the Night. Rika Muranaka voiced The Best Is Yet to Come from Metal Gear Solid 1, and the band Star Sailor sealed the vocals for Way to Fall, the end theme for Metal Gear Solid 3. That was a trick question, because all of those people have done Metal Gear themes.
Yeah.
Which of the following bosses does Solid Snake never encounter in the original Metal Gear? Hind D, Big Boss, Shot Gunner, or Red Blaster?
It's Hind D.
Hind D. The answer, which is forthcoming, is Red Blaster.
What?
Solid Snake eventually encounters Red Blaster in the sequel, Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake. Red Blaster attacks snakes by throwing grenades while clinging to a wall. You know what? I think we should just go to the boss questions, because I think they're just going to be more crazy.
Yeah.
Let me go back to this one. Bosses from the Metal Gear series. And they all have great names as well, which is really part of the fun of Metal Gear Solid bosses. This was made by someone named Hotshot_SS. So I guess they're a fan of Nazis. Okay. What weapon does Pyro Bison use? WP grenades, flamethrower, torch, or matches?
I'm going to guess a flamethrower.
Flamethrower is correct. He has an obsession with fire, so that's probably why he is called Pyro Bison. He is the third boss to fight in Metal Gear Ghost Babble. Ooh, who is the boss you fight first in Metal Gear Solid 1? Cyborg Ninja, Psycho Mantis, misspelled, Sniper Wolf, or Revolver Ocelot?
It's a Revolver Ocelot.
Now, what is an ocelot?
It's like a cat.
Ah, okay. You encounter him in the room with Kenneth Baker, the president of Arms Tech. After the fight, he gets his arm cut off by Cyborg Ninja, which in the future leads to a crucial event in the Metal Gear Solid series. Yes, it does. How many soldiers are in the Ocelot unit that you have to kill in Metal Gear Solid 3 on normal mode? That's tough. Is it 10, 6, 7, or 8?
I think it's 8.
8. That is correct. The Ocelot unit is an elite GRU unit headed by Ocelot. The unit is commanded by Vulgan, of course.
Well, that's a trick question, because I've played through the whole game and I killed none of them.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because you can actually tranquilize them and that still counts.
I think this question is related to that. If you beat the boss non-lethal, you get her camouflage. What is the name of the camouflage? Moss, Snake, Cold War, Animals.
I think it's Moss is the end. Cold War is Vulgan. And the Animals is Sphere, so it's the other one.
Snake. That is correct. The Snake camo gives you high cover in any environment. You receive the Animals camo when you beat Ocelot non-lethal. The Animals camo makes it so there is no handshaking while you're aiming, and it gives you very good cover in the desert-type areas. The Cold War camo is received when you beat Vulgan, non-lethal. It has the Soviet flag on it, so guards will hesitate to shoot you. You receive the Moss camo when you beat the End, non-lethal. You gain stamina when you are standing in a light, and it gives you 100% cover in green areas.
That's how much I played number 3, where I was able to be like, yeah, I remember, that's where you get that.
Let's see. Who is not a boss in Metal Gear Acid 2? Golab, Harab Sarap, Shugadil, and Red Blaster.
I'll go with Red Blaster.
That is correct. Harab Sarap is some kind of green beast with detachable hands. Golab is a boss who swallows some kind of gasoline and blows it out like a flamethrower. And Shagadiel has hypnosis and psychic powers. Ah, one of my favorites. Fat Man is a member of what organization? The Cobras, Black Chamber, Foxhound, or Dead Cell?
That's Dead Cell.
That is Dead Cell. Dead Cell is an anti-terrorist group that held the president and other people hostage on a facility known as Big Shell in Metal Gear Solid 2. The other members of Dead Cell are Solidus Snake, Fortune, and Vamp.
We have to save that for when we talk about Metal Gear 2.
Yeah, that's like, one of my favorite things. Fat Man is probably one of my very favorite parts of that, all in all. okay, let's just do this, right? I think we're warmed up, lubricated.
I think so.
We're going to go on to Metal Gear. And what we've been trying to do is talk a little bit about the plot, because that's the best we can do. It's very difficult. But we'll try. So let's see. Near the end of the 20th century, the West discovers that a weapon of mass destruction is being constructed inside Outer Haven, a fortified state founded by a legendary mercenary 200 kilometers north of some place in South Africa. The Special Forces...
Zanzibar.
Galsburg.
Oh, Galsburg.
The Special Forces Unit Foxhound sends top agent Gray Fox to infiltrate the fortress, assess the situation, and neutralize the threat. Foxhound loses contact with Gray Fox a few days later, with his last transmission being Metal Gear... To discover what happened to Gray Fox, Foxhound commander Big Boss sends his newest recruit, Solid Snake, into the area in an operation code name. This is a great code name. Intrude N313. Upon insertion into Outer Haven, Snake makes contact with local resistance members Schneider, Diane, and Jennifer. Using all of his skills and the equipment he procures on site, he manages to rescue Fox. Fox explains that Metal Gear is the codename of a nuclear-equipped bipedal walking tank, bipedal, which can engage in all forms of combat and launch nuclear weapons from any location. Outer Haven plans to use Metal Gear to impose itself as the new world superpower. He gets in there, and he destroys Metal Gear. Turns out Big Boss was in charge of it, and sets the self-destruct sequence for the compound and promises he will not die alone. Snake defeats Big Boss in a last battle and escapes the Outer Haven compound as it crumbles in flames behind him. After the end credits, a message from Big Boss is displayed saying that he will meet Solid Snake again. So that's Metal... This is kind of where it all began. And where we learn the important thing of what is Metal Gear. It's a walking robot that shoots a nuclear bomb.
Now, I've heard things that I don't know if they're true, but like in Japan, you actually got to fight Metal Gear.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the American version, they just had you type stuff into a computer and then it gets destroyed.
Oh, that sounds very lame.
And so that's, yeah, so I wasn't sure if that was this particular game. But the thing I remember most, because I've only played this very briefly, and I do remember that you do punch a dog, like very early on in the game. Like you have to sneak around and punch a dog in the back.
Yes, you do have to do that.
Like you have to punch a dog's butt until it dies.
Yeah.
And that seems to be part of the thing. But the other thing I remember was the ads that were in the back of comic books.
Yeah, and it would show all the gear.
It showed all the gear you got and how cool that looked.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you get a fist that punches through walls, or, you know, you get a radio.
And scuba gear.
Which, go ahead.
No, yeah, those are not to be, I have to say, and this is something that probably people don't understand anymore, is like, when you played a NES game, Nintendo Entertainment System, and even to an extent Super Nintendo and Sega, like unless you had played it before at someone's house, you probably had no fucking idea what it was until you took it home. And so like the box art and what it claimed was really all you had to go off.
You had nothing. Today you could look up a game before you played it. You could see what it looks like, how it moves, everything else. But we had to watch. You got stills occasionally, like still footage.
Yeah.
Still pictures. But in most cases, you just got like descriptions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would have killed for what, you know. Now I see probably more videos or stills from games than I actually play. You know, right. I've seen things from games like The Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite, which I've never played.
I've seen so many like gameplay, so much gameplay footage of Diablo 3, and I've never played it.
Yeah, I've never played Warcraft, yet I know exactly what it looks like. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much of that out there. But at this time, a sweet comic book ad was, like, super memorable, and you're like, maybe I should play this game. Or sometimes, I remember looking at the Metal Gear ad and being like, this game might be a little too, like, badass for me.
it's way too specific and complicated, because I do remember looking at that ad, and it had, like, an RPG. It had a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
And then it also had a glove for punching through walls.
Yeah.
And I actually sat down and thought of, like, you know, if I had the rocket-propelled grenade, I think I could knock down a wall. I wouldn't need a special glove for that.
Sure.
Which was that sort of video game logic thing of, like, you can't blow up the wall with an explosive. You have to have the punchy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it does do that. Like, that's one of the frustrating things of, like, you know, any sort of older game especially, but even newer games, because you're like, couldn't I just blow this up? Really? I mean, give me a break. I'm trying to look and see if I can see the list of items
that you could get. Like, you play a game like a Resident Evil, and you say, can I just climb through the window or, like, you know, sort of go around something? Yeah. Rather than be like, okay, I've got to go through this one door or this space or that, or like someone's trying to break in, you say, I can push this desk.
Yeah, you're like, this scene, okay, here's what we've got. I've got the actual ad. It says, gear up, Metal Gear. You can get a bomb blast suit, which shields you from explosions. And then next to that, you have flashlight, illuminate underground passages. You're like, okay. You know, it's a weird mix of, like, okay, you've got mines, you know, a submachine gun, a rocket launcher, a remote control missile, an antenna, and then iron glove allows you to punch to locate hidden doors with a single punch. So it's like you've got all this crazy shit. Oh my God, you've got a mine detector that looks exactly like a metal detector. I saw someone the other day for the first time using one of those like metal detectors that's like a plate stuck on a long pole. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen someone use one of those in forever, but I had one that I bought at a garage sale when I was a kid because I was like, this is gonna make me rich. But I never even made up the dollar that I spent on the metal detector.
I vaguely remember this, like you'd walk around and I think the thing you found most frequently were sprinkler heads.
Yeah, I would be like, you know, it make this horrible noise, and then I'd say, oh sweet, and then you'd look in the ground and you're like, oh well, that's a thing that belongs there.
Or it's a sprinkler head.
Yeah, or trash.
Yeah,
if you ever wanted to like really clean up an environment area, I recommend getting a metal detector. If you ever wanted to make money, I do not recommend a metal detector. That's
it's sort of, you should just hang on to your dollar.
Yeah, exactly. So something I had read about Metal Gear and then Metal Gear Solid, which we'll get to in just a second, is basically, I mean, and it seems like from what I just read about Metal Gear and what I know about Metal Gear Solid, what I understand is the maker of these games, Hideo Kojima, was kind of frustrated with the technology at the time of the release of Metal Gear on Nintendo, and mm-hmm. Metal Gear Solid is kind of like closer to his vision. You know, but they didn't have the capabilities on Nintendo to do the kind of stuff he wanted to do.
Right.
And so, like, Metal Gear Solid sounds like it's got a lot of retreading of these kind of same ideas. And that was kind of the relaunch, you know, because we go from, that's 1995. We get another game in 1999, which is, I think, similar to Metal Gear. And then it's 6 years later, 2005, that we get Metal Gear Solid.
And one thing before leaving one of the SNES titles, or the NES titles, like the Nintendo title, was that the original version, I do remember this, that the localization, which is the translation from Japanese to English,
yeah,
was really bad.
Oh, really?
Like it was script. back in a time where that was not always a very smooth process.
Yeah.
there's an old pro wrestling game where it will, once you finish, it will say, congratulations, a winner is you.
Right, right. A winner is you.
A winner is you. And this one would, like, if you saw a guard that was, like, kind of tired, mm-hmm. he would say, I feel asleep.
Let me find this, because there's a thing that, let's see. Translator. I feel asleep.
Yeah. So you're translating this from English to Japanese?
Oh, no. I was just trying to find the... I thought it said something about the thing.
You thought it said something about the thing, you say?
Yeah, I thought there would be a thing about the... Oh, yeah. Here's a guy saying, I feel asleep with 2 exclamation points.
Which also makes no sense because no one says I feel sleepy or anything of that, like, that excitedly.
I feel asleep. Let's see if this is what this says. I am Dr. Petrovich. My daughter Ellen is a hostage. You know, that kind of shit. Let's see.
Well, that's at least expository, like, kind of clunky, but at least it makes sense. You know, it's a those are sentences in the English language.
The foxhounder who infiltrated a few days ago is safe. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty bad. But yeah, I feel asleep, exclamation point. I feel asleep!
And I mean, there's a whole podcast and things about localization, but this was back in a time where that was not always a big deal.
Yeah.
And localization is actually really important to Metal Gear Solid because the person who was in charge of that was a native English speaker.
Right. So it actually made sense.
Yeah, and he really made sure that this game made sense in English.
Yeah.
Like, that was really important.
I played it, you know, I guess I would have been like in early high school perhaps. And I remember thinking there were some strange elements to it, but I wasn't playing it thinking like this seems very Japanese.
Yeah.
You know, by then we'd played some games, you know, like Final Fantasy, I would say was a game that had, it was pretty good, but there were some parts that you're like, this seems very Japanese to me.
That, the game that I loved and you hated.
Yeah.
That Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah.
Also had huge problems with the localization.
Yeah.
Where large parts of the political intrigue plot really didn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
Because, like, it was a very clear, what we would call today a Google Translate kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where they just kind of plugged in words, and then it spat them out, and it's like, yeah, that's it. So sometimes it was unclear if the people just didn't know English very well, or they didn't care very much, or they just decided, we just got to put it out.
Right.
So, which all could have happened, but... Like, it was a long time before some of these games made any sense. And if you listen to the last episode, they still don't make a lot of sense logically. But Metal Gear for the Nintendo and the other ones made even less sense because the localization was not all there.
Right. On that exact note, actually, I'm looking at the description and the characters for Metal Gear Solid 2.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some pretty hilarious translations. So we had Roy Campbell, which was originally spelled Roy Cayanbull, McDonnell Miller, George Kaiser, which was George Kessler, Johann Jacobson, and then Holly White, which is spelled Horry White, Horry.
You can see some versions of Metal Gear Solid uh-huh. with Revolver Ocerot.
Yeah.
And that's, like, written up top, too. It's not as if it's said Ocerot. It's, like, written that way as well.
Yeah.
Which might be just for a Japanese audience. Which yeah. I'm not really sure why the Japanese audience has the characters, like, the English characters.
Right.
And they spell it Ocerot instead of Ocelot.
Yeah. I mean, it's so it's so unfortunate because you're like... that's like the thing that people do to make fun of Asian people, right? Is the L and the R thing. And then when there's a Chinese restaurant in town and they have a thing on their menu that's like that. And I'm like, I always think when I see that, I'm like, do you not have like one English speaking friend? Can you, if you offered me a free meal, I would look this shit over for you and be like, hey, this is, come on.
That was your complaint about the Persian food restaurant as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They have,
where it was clearly not like they just said, here's the menu. Screw it.
Yeah. Fuck it. We made a menu. We're done. And we don't care. And you know what? If you make, here's what I want to know. If I sort of mock people for that, I feel like it's racist. However, I also feel like, I mean, how racist is it? Because I feel like maybe they could fix that if they tried.
I guess here's the difference, is that when I've traveled overseas and been overseas,
yeah,
sometimes I see, you know, bad English or what's sometimes called Ingrish.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I understand, like, if it's not really there because they don't really have someone else to go to.
Right.
And these are a lot of, you know, some of that is before Google Translate. And even today, right, you say, like, okay, they probably plugged it into Google Translate. It came out a little weird. They don't really know. You know, there's no one around.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I remember when we were in Morocco, we went to a burger restaurant that was basically, like, Mickey Mouse themed. And then all the names of the burgers were a complete ripoff of McDonald's. Like, they, I don't know, Big Mac was called, like, the Big Matt or something like that. I mean, and, you know, they had drawings of, like, Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse up on the walls and shit.
Sure. And, like, that's the kind of thing where you understand where things are a little strange or things are a little off because they just don't have someone else to ask.
Yeah, and also it's like, well, fuck it. It's not, who's coming here?
Yeah, and they sort of,
Disney
they
is
say,
coming here.
Yeah, and they also say, like, to some degree, when you're overseas, too, it's like, at least they're trying, you know?
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything. Like, I've been to restaurants where they're like, no, we're not going to change any stuff.
Right. Fuck you yourself. Know, like,
places in Korea would just have all Korean. They'd be like, you don't know what it is?
Yeah. Good luck. You know,
good luck.
Enjoy your eyeballs.
That's right. But, you know, in the U.S., there's a difference of, you could ask somebody who works there.
Yeah.
You know, like, you could ask, like, one person who works there, like, one person you hire is going to speak English, you know.
Yeah. Or, like, one customer.
Yeah.
Just
or
level.
You know, someone who gives you the loan, like, the loan papers. They say, hey, could you take a look over our menu? You know, there's got to be somebody, like, who could look, or the lawyer you hire to be, because I assume if you're going to open a restaurant, you need a lawyer at some point.
Sure.
You know, you throw them an extra $10 and say, could you look over our menu? Make sure it's, you know, in English.
Totally.
And they go, yeah, that's fine. Or change this. Get what you're saying here. You change it around.
You know, I've always toyed with this weird idea that I've sort of concocted lately. And it's whether a person could make a living basically offering freelance English degree services. So, for example, I'll just make, you just give me your info, I'll make your resume, and I charge you $10, right? So you give it to me, I just throw it in a MS Word template, and then you get it back. Or like, you know, in this case, before you print up your menus, bring them to me, I'll read them for $10, and then, you know, check them. Like, I wonder if you could cobble together enough of these type of things that eventually you would make it.
I think with resumes, you'd have the basic problem that people don't know what to put, so you get a lot of weird information.
Sure, but yeah, I mean, I'd be like, here's a sheet to fill out. You can fill it out by hand and just send it back to me or whatever.
Right. Like, I think of the menus, you'd at least get a product that people wanted because they know what they want to say, they just you know, put it in a weird phrasing. Whereas with menus or resumes, you have people who are native English speakers who send weird resumes.
This is what I'm saying, though, is, like, sometimes in my work, I help people with resumes, and, like, you see the things that they're doing that you're like, it's not necessarily wrong, but to have, like, this section end with two letters on the next page is not a good idea.
Right.
You know, or, like, having a little box on here that says, you know, place name here, and then you print it off, and it's still on there. Like, no good.
Yeah, they just didn't get that the, you know, that someone had made a template and you didn't change those things or remove those things.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those type of people would probably take you up on an offer of like, look, $10, I'll make it for you, and I'm telling you that this is right.
To sort of fix it. Not, I mean, what's tough with that is that you'd have to like say it doesn't guarantee that you'll get a job.
No.
It just guarantees that like your resume won't look, you won't look like an idiot.
Yeah. If you don't get a job, it won't be because your resume looks crazy. It'll be because the shit on your resume is crazy, or you're crazy.
Right.
Or, you know, the job is crazy. I also wanted to read the names of the bosses from the second Metal Gear, because they're pretty hilarious.
Okay.
We have Black Color, who was renamed Black Ninja in later versions, which who is an experimental, drug-enhanced space ninja, who is also revealed to be Schneider from the original Metal Gear for some reason.
Did you say drug-enhanced space ninja?
That is correct.
This is the thing that's strange about Hideo Kojima, who actually comes up with a lot of it. It really seems like he is a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, this will come up continuously throughout the series, but it says, when you say drug-enhanced space ninja, no one was able to go, let's just go with, like, two of those things.
Right? This is what I'm saying. I'm trying to see if it can find, like, what happened. You know, he survived, he was taken, he was used as a guinea pig for NASA's top-secret extraterrestrial environmental space forces unit, codenamed Black Ninja. He was outfitted with an experimental flex armor suit and reflex-enhancing drugs. When the Black Ninja unit was disbanded, Schneider and the other members of the unit fled to Zanzibar land and assisted Big Boss in the mercenary war. That's all it says.
That's what's strange, and this will come up over and over again, but, like, why do people keep going for experiments or getting caught in experiments? And especially, it's not as if, like, these are hobos.
Yeah.
You know, who get pulled into being into a cyber suit.
Right.
In some cases, like, I could understand if it's like, oh, they got injured somehow, but there's just like, oh, someone's put into a crazy experiment. Where if someone said, hey, we're going to have an experimental NASA suit.
Right.
Would you like to do so? Would you say, yeah, I'm in? Or would you go, eh, no?
You know, I'm probably a bad person to ask that, because I've, like, read enough comic books that I would probably say yes to that. If they were like, this is going to give you enhanced strength and reflexes and stuff, I'd be like, all right, I'm in. Let's fucking
You're
do
sold.
It. Yeah, there's a chance I could be a superhero. More than likely, I'll be a pile of goo. I just heard this great story on this podcast called The Memory Palace, and they tried to make basically spy microphones out of cats. So, like, what they were thinking, this is like Cold War era or something, the beginning of the Cold War, and they're like, well, people will suspect, but if a cat has a microphone embedded in it and just walks up to two guys talking on a bench, then we'll get to hear what they're saying, right?
Okay.
So, of course, they at first were trying to train cats, and that was impossible. So, eventually, they got this cat, and they, like, embedded a bunch of wires and shit in him, and, like, put a microphone under his skin, and could sort of, not completely, but rudimentary remote control the cat and convince it to do things, sort of. So, they have this, like, cyber ninja space cat or whatever, and they deployed it. And it, like, exited the building to go to the park and immediately got hit by a cab. Which I just thought was so funny, because it's like, God, they put so much work into really making this work, and it didn't work. And, you know, I was telling this to a friend who's a very much a cat lover, and I was talking about other things that I'd seen on Wikipedia from about that same period, because, like, this seems like a period of science, which, interestingly,
I mean, I remember hearing stuff about these sort of killer dolphins.
Yeah.
That one of my favorite stories was, like, both the U.S. and the Soviet Union were experimenting with this.
Uh-huh.
And Among my favorite stories was the idea of aerial insertion of these dolphins,
yeah,
which they realized would never work because the planes could never go slowly enough,
right,
to just drop a dolphin into the ocean without a parachute.
Like it would just become, you know, liquid.
Yeah, like you're just throwing it out of a plane, and like no one thought, like, you know, people are like, oh yeah, people jump out of planes, but yes, the parachute slows them down considerably.
Yeah.
So a plane could never go slow enough and really low enough,
right,
for a dolphin to be inserted into the ocean.
And see, it's so funny because I feel like here's what's funny about like a crackpot idea. They always take it a little further than you'd really expect. Like, you would think, yeah, before they got to that level, they'd be like, ah, shit, this is kind of stupid. But then really they're like, well, that's the point where we were like, okay, it's too hard.
It's, no, I know they still have dolphins in combat, like military, sure, dolphins. Why they not? Put it like cameras on them, like just kind of patrolling around.
Yeah.
And you can kind of, like, I could see that with a dolphin where you kind of did that, but one of the stories they told was like what they would have as, like, they'd have attack dolphins.
Uh-huh.
Which would have a little syringe that was supposed to like jam into a diver.
Okay.
Like if someone was sort of trying to sabotage the boat, the idea was the dolphin would go and kill this dude,
right,
with a syringe, like go and bump into him essentially.
Right.
And then like swim away and the guy would die.
Right.
One of the stranger parts of that story was that someone had said the dolphins couldn't be trained to do that more than once because the dolphins would sense distress and then not do the same behavior again.
Because they're like, oh, that was evil. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, like, oh, I didn't mean to kill that person. I'm not going to do this act again.
Man's best friend.
Yeah. And the dolphins couldn't be trained to just kill on their own. Like, you couldn't train the dolphin to just attack.
Right. Right, because you're not like, here, attack the way dolphins do, but do it to this man.
Right, like dogs you can kind of train to attack or, yeah, something similar. Like you could put a really angry dog in a spot and just say,
kill,
you know, chow down.
Yeah.
Whereas a dolphin, you couldn't do that.
See, I mean, in a horrible way, I sort of lament that these things don't seem to be going on. I mean, maybe they are and we just don't find out until later. So when I was talking about the cat bomb, this person was like, is this around the same period when they tried to make the gay bomb? Which, this is an article I read on Wikipedia, but here we go. The halitosis bomb and gay bomb are informal names for two theoretical non-lethal chemical weapons that a United States Air Force research laboratory speculated about producing. The theories involve discharging female sex pheromones over enemy forces in order to make them sexually attracted to each other. In 1994, the Wright Laboratory in Ohio, a predecessor to today's United States Air Force Research Laboratory, 1994, by the way, produced a three-page proposal on a variety of possible non-lethal chemical weapons, which was later obtained by the Sunshine Project through the Freedom of Information Act. So basically, the idea was, in both the documents, the possibility was canvassed that a strong aphrodisiac could be dropped on enemy troops, ideally one which would also cause homosexual behavior. The documents described the aphrodisiac weapon as distasteful.
Could cause homosexuality?
Homosexual behavior. And that's in quotes. The documents describe the aphrodisiac weapon as distasteful but completely non-lethal. The new discoveries needed section of one of the documents implicitly acknowledges that no such chemicals are actually known. The reports also include many other offbeat ideas, such as spraying enemy troops with bee pheromones and then hiding numerous beehives in the combat area, and a chemical weapon that would give the enemy bad breath. I think we just lost my brother. Somehow. So I'm gonna call it back. Oh, hey, you're back.
Yep. Yeah, I just dropped the internet just dropped out for a second.
It's cool. All you missed was they also another offbeat idea was spraying enemy troops with bee pheromones and then hiding numerous beehives in the combat area.
It seems It's even kind of like you could just drop a whole bunch of angry bees, you know, and that would be, you don't need the bee pheromone part.
Yeah.
You could just get an Africanized beehive and just drop it in.
This is also body odor remote engineering, such as halitosis and hyperhidrosis, was another possibility discussed. Again, these effects would be produced by a non-lethal chemical weapon, possibly one that would affect the hormonal and digestive systems. It appears that a heavy sweating bomb, flatulence bomb, and halitosis bomb were also considered by a committee at the time. The plan was to make an enemy so smelly they could be quite literally sniffed out of hiding by their opponents. It was also considered fairly damaging to the enemy's morale.
Now, I think the thing is with, like, a, you know, any kind of stink bomb, and really the heavy sweating bomb, too, is going to, like, how do they know it won't just kill someone by dehydrating them?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a good, like, question, actually.
And the bee bomb, like, people are allergic to bees in a large enough rate.
Right.
You know, that would still be pretty lethal, and also being stung to death by angry bees like Macaulay Culkin and My Girl.
Right.
You know, is that more humane than just shooting them? Or, like, dropping a really, you know, an explosive?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a weird idea.
Like, I mean, I guess the idea, like, if you could drop, like, just a whole bunch of anesthetic, right? And you would knock them unconscious, that would be perfectly fine. But if you drop too much anesthetic, they're just dead anyway.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's like a weird... Well, it just seems pretty unnecessary, right? I mean, I don't... It's such a long... It's like the thing, the characteristic of these sorts of things, I would say, is they all sort of take the long way around.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, we don't want to kill them, but let's drop a thing that, you know, fucks with their hormones and makes them crazy and decide to... They cannot resist... doing gay stuff together, I guess.
It seems like that could also backfire. Like, the bees is the one that I thought would backfire really easily, where it's like, once you have the bees on the battlefield,
right,
and you need to capture and hold that territory, you now have a territory full of bees.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't just drop a bunch of wasps from wherever, from a plane.
Right.
And then
there's also, that means you have a plane full of wasps, which people would figure out, like, let's just shoot a couple holes in it, and then the wasps will get out. Then that plane is done.
Well, and also, these sort of, I guess these non-lethal things seem like a good idea, but the problem is, like, I don't know that we've ever been engaged in a combat situation where both sides agreed to sort of go non-lethal. So it's just basically a prank Home Alone war of things against each other.
We decided to have a prank war.
Yeah, because, like, if they're going to try and blow your plane apart with a rocket launcher, why are you going to bother flying over with a bunch of bees?
I guess it's that if you wanted to break the will of somebody who was not, like, you know, maybe if you're bombing a civilian area.
Yeah.
You know, and you want them to leave the munitions factory, but you don't.
Oh, are you gone again? I have no audio of you coming through, unfortunately. I don't know if we lost your audio. Oh, call dropped. See how it is with this Skype? I'll tell you what. Oh, that was my fault that time. My computer is garbage, you guys. I don't know if you know this, but it has a disease. And here's what the disease is. I can only maintain a wireless connection so long, and then it'll die. It just dies a million deaths. Not a million deaths, but one. And then I have to run this troubleshooter. Lately, I've found that what I can do sometimes is if I play a YouTube video that's constantly streaming, you know, so a 10-hour video, that seems to somehow make it work. But, you know, we're collecting results, configuration details, resolving problems. You know what I don't understand about this, and boy, have I tried to fix it, is, like, it just drops after a while, but the troubleshooter always fixes it. But it doesn't fix it permanently. It just fixes it to the point where it's like, ah, this will work next time. You're like, great. you know, now it's verifying that the problem is resolved, which is like, it's, of course it's resolved. It always works. Uh-oh, plug in Ethernet. That's not what I want to do. Fuck that shit. Here we go. Now I'm connecting. I'm already back. Now I'm back. So I just got to turn on some long-ass video. This is why I wish I wasn't poor. Then I could, you know, not have to deal with this bullshit. Now I'll reconnect. Doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
That was me that time.
Yeah, I think it's hard when we're recording this on a Sunday when everyone's watching Netflix.
Is that what goes on?
That's what I've heard, is that like a lot of internet traffic tends to go up on Sunday nights when everyone's at home watching streaming video or porn.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Do a lot of people watch porn on a Sunday as opposed to whenever?
I think a lot of people watch porn all the time.
Hmm. Mm.
So.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, too. All right. Let's go back to... So, you know, let's just move on to Metal Gear Solid. Because this is where I can really begin to have opinions and say things.
Right.
So Metal Gear Solid comes out, let me see the year, 1998 was its release year. So we might have had it like in 1999-ish or something like that.
I think so. I got a used PlayStation 4, or a used PlayStation from GameForce.
Yeah.
Which was a small game retailer.
Yeah.
And exactly what you would expect from a place that sells used games.
Yeah. Yeah, the people there were sort of mad that when you came in general.
They wanted to just play games all day. Like they paid somebody who wanted to play video games. It was chronically unemployable.
Right.
And a strange thing about like most places in the world, but our town in particular, where it seemed unclear that almost everyone in the GameForce was way too old to be working there.
Oh yeah, they all seemed like they were like 35 at the youngest.
Yeah, like it's the kind of job where if you were 16, you'd understand why somebody has that job.
Right, right. Yeah, ideal. That would have been ideal when I was like 16.
Yeah, or if they were like 19 or 20, they're in college. It's kind of like it's a job that's low stress.
Yeah,
you don't make a ton of money, but you could probably study while you were doing a lot of the work there.
Or play video games and get discounts on video games.
Right, like it's the kind of thing that when you were 20, or you know, yeah, like it's the kind of thing that when you were a certain age, it would make sense. But as an adult, or even if you were like out of college, or even out of high school and you decided like you wanted to support a family, there was no way you were going to do it on a GameForce salary.
No, no. No, like I don't know what was going on with the people who worked there. I don't know how they lived.
Right.
I mean, or maybe they just looked much older. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to the McDonald's and you see the person there who's like, you see the lady who's like 65 and you're like, well, maybe this is a sad thing, but like I worked at a McDonald's with a couple 65-year-old ladies and one of them just came in like 2 hours, 4 days a week. It was basically like, I will drive myself crazy at home. I need this.
Right.
And the other one was sort of just out of it as well. But, like, when you see that person there that you're like, Jesus Christ, man, you should not be. I don't know. On the one hand, I don't want to cast aspersions on someone, you know, the super old Walmart employee or whatever. But you're just like, this is really terrible.
I kind of get it, though, like, if someone is, you know, I get the idea if, like, you're 65 or 75. You're on a limited income, so maybe you're bringing in a little extra money, or you just you got something to do, you know?
Yeah, but God damn, couldn't you find something better than that? I mean,
I think there's Walgreens? A lot of old people. There's a lot of older people who are not very creative. Like they just see another old person and go, or like they go to like they work at a place where they go.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
They just kind of like I show up there, so I know what it is. And I think they just don't really, like, they're not looking for a dream job, they're just looking for an activity, and this fills that.
Right.
The first thing that comes along. but these, like, these people honestly should have been in their sort of prime career earning, you know, they're in their prime earning potential years.
Yeah.
You know, they are, if someone's 75 and they're working at all, you say, good for, you know, good on you enough.
Yeah, you
know,
like, hopefully you don't have to do this, so.
Right, you don't really have to. Or, you know, the time has passed you by and maybe this is the only job you can get.
Sure.
Or, like, you're disabled enough or old enough where there's not much you can do physically, but you can say hello.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, I exclude, I guess, the Walmart greeter, because I feel like, right, as shitty as that job is and as shitty as Walmart is, it's like, well, I'll say this. That's one of the few places you can work, and they seem to, for that job, hire, you know, there's no floor for that job. There's no basement too low.
They're hiring people that probably couldn't get jobs anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, when they literally cannot have a job, it seems right, like those people can still have that job. Right. So that's something. I mean, it's something.
But it feels like, if, you know, at that age, you shouldn't be working at GameForce for minimum wage.
Right.
You know, and I part of me does hope that those people were, like, aspiring programmers, and that this was something they had to do during the day, but if you were a computer programmer, even back then, you could probably find a job.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, that seems pretty unlikely. Unless they were super unambitious. And even then, I struggle to think of the situation in which someone of that age is, like, working. And the guys who worked there, I feel like it was the same guys there for, like, 5 years.
It was a combination of the guys who worked there who were probably, they had the mentality of computer programmers, but not the intelligence or skill.
Right. The lack of social abilities and the sort of awkward craziness of a computer program wrapped up in a worthless package.
Right. It might make me think that they were, like, all severely autistic.
That's what's so I was about to say.
Yeah.
So I just read this really good book, and there's this character in it. He just makes a brief appearance, but he's kind of, like, you can tell, borderline autistic. I mean, he basically says, like, I have a really hard time reading people's emotions. And I was like, well, I mean, this worked out great for him because he's, like, a NASA mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he doesn't really have to talk to people, and people just sort of accept that he's a weird autistic guy because they're like, well, he's in a good position and he does this math that no one else could do, so it's perfect. But I was like, I think that, like, society or movies or whatever has led us to believe that, like, autistic people are all really good at math and, like, good at other things. And I don't think that could possibly be true.
I think that it's that we, you know, the things and the stories that get picked up are about autistic people who overcome something.
Right.
In that, it's the same way that when we hear cancer stories, we always hear from, you know, people who've beaten back cancer or survived. Right. We don't hear the story about the person who wept uncontrollably, then spent all of their money, and then died.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they usually pick out the more inspirational things to talk about because, yeah, the person who just went broke, had cancer, and died, it's like, well, there's a million of those, so what's the story?
Right. Or it's a story that's too depressing, and, like, the idea of, hey, here's a guy with autism who kind of works at Lowe's.
Yeah.
And he's really kind of marking time, you know, he's kind of marking time for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot for him.
Yeah.
There's not a lot we can do for him. So we're just kind of, yeah, we're waiting until he dies, I guess.
Just waiting for the sweet release of death.
Yeah. He's not going to, you know, this is about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's... I don't know, it's just a weird thing, but, you know,
it's depressing, but it's reality, where you say, like, yeah, this is probably about what we can expect from this individual.
Yeah, and I think it goes into this thing I have of, like, hey, look, a lot of people have good skills or whatever, and there's, like, a good in a lot of people, but I don't know if there's, like, a good in everyone. I mean, here's the thing. It's, like, sort of, you know, we have this idea, I think, of, like, the noble handicapped person. And right. It's like, I don't know. I've encountered people that were handicapped, like in a wheelchair, let's say, who were assholes. And like, to an extent, you're like, well, I got to accept it because I would probably be pissed if I was in a wheelchair too. But then after a while, you just feel like, hey, man, I know you're in a wheelchair and that sucks and things are a lot harder for you. I still don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to you. I dread seeing you come in to wherever I am.
I think it's sometimes we want, you know, the realistic goal for some people and for most of us is to be not a burden.
Right.
You know, like, or less of a burden. And some of those stories want to go further about, like, look how much this person contributes.
Right.
Look how much this person adds.
Right.
And to sound like even more of a terrible person. Sometimes, like, if you had that severely, you know, autistic person doing the Lowe's job, you know, like at the cash register.
Right.
There's somebody who could have that job who maybe that's a stepping stone to something else.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the person who can't do anything more shouldn't have that job because then they're productive.
Right.
But, you know, like when we say that, that's the inspiration. It's no, not everyone's inspirational. Some people, that's just what we have.
Exactly.
They're good enough, you know. But there's no one like that in Metal Gear Solid, which is not a good transition.
But here we are. So
I guess every guard is basically severely autistic or retarded.
Yeah, there's something very... They have no object permanence.
No.
You know, if something moves, but then... If they see you run around a corner and you're under a cardboard box, but then see that box just sitting still, they may not know you're in there.
There's a cardboard box sitting in the middle of a snowy field where there wasn't a cardboard box before. They'll go up and look at it and then walk away, and then when the cardboard box is suddenly gone.
Yeah.
Like, they have the understanding of, like, a five-year-old.
Right.
Where, like, once it's not in their line of sight, it no longer exists.
Yeah, and this brings up a good point, I think, about guards in games and movies, and what makes me wonder about, because I, you know, obviously I've never been anywhere in real life where there are a bunch of armed guards, like the airport, or I guess the airport's the closest thing, post 9/11. They had a bunch of guards. Like, I feel like if they just saw a cardboard box overturned, they'd be like, I better check this shit out.
Or, like, they would call the bomb squad, or they'd be like, hey, we've got a thing, you know?
At the very least, if there was just a box just laying in the concourse in the middle, sitting on the moving walkway, let's say, they wouldn't just let it go by. They'd be like, you know what? I gotta look into this. Kind of my entire job.
The airport does a thing where they say, like, if you leave your luggage, like, if you go to the bathroom and leave your suitcase somewhere,
yeah,
they're going to assume that there's something wrong with it.
Right. And, yeah, and in the case of Metal Gear Solid, you're on, like, an Antarctic base where nobody should be there.
You're Antarctic base with a bunch of military personnel.
Yeah.
And they kind of say, like, oh, what's this box?
Right.
Oh, well, move on. And they don't call someone else to come check this out, or they don't, like, they never really stand, like, a far distance away from it either. They just kind of stand as close as they can to it and then move away.
Yeah. Yeah, no nudge.
Or in the true, like, video game fashion, occasionally in the snow they'll find footprints.
Right. And they follow them. Yeah.
And they know it's not their own footprints.
Right.
And they know it's not the other... They don't assume it's the other guards, either.
No.
Because they all set patrol partners, and it's like, huh? Whose footprints are these?
Yeah, and they follow them for a while, but then if they don't get anywhere fast enough, they're just like, eh, screw it.
They've run out, like, I followed this for long enough.
Yeah.
Or if you run... You know, the best trick, though, is that if you run around in a circle, they'll just follow, and they'll walk around in a circle following your same exact path.
Yeah, if you ran like a straight line going east, and then you did like a donut walking, basically, you did like five of them, and then continue running straight east, the person following you will follow you to those footsteps, circle five times like you did, and then continue on.
You could also fire a gun, and they'll be like, huh? What was that noise?
Yeah. And it's like, well,
you can shoot them too, and they'll be like, huh? What's going on?
Yeah, you can shoot a guy, and if he doesn't die, or you could run up, punch a guy, knock him down, and then go run away. And he'll look for you for like a minute, and if he doesn't find you, it's like, well, I guess everything's fine.
Right.
Okay, so all of that said, Metal Gear Solid is like one of my favorite all-time games. Like, if I had to say, you know, if I had to pick 10 or even 5 games that, you know, made me who I am today, game-wise, it would definitely, that would be pretty close to the top of the list.
Like, that might be a solid, it'd be a solid 3, yeah, but it would definitely, like, it would be in your top 5 and pretty high in your top 5.
Yeah, and here's why. Are you playing with a wrench or something?
Yeah. I'll put that down.
Nailed it.
Yep.
Yeah. The thing is, like, it was the first game I'd ever played that I think felt like a grown-up video game. Like, it felt, there was, you know, a story to it, and it's very, like, melodramatic and soap opera-y in a lot of ways. But also, you know, it's like you're trying to prevent a nuclear war, and you're, like, the character you are was so different from the Sonic the Hedgehogs or the, like, Green Dogs of the world. I mean, you were like this soldier type of guy, but you're kind of a grizzled out of retirement, which is one of my favorite things. Like, any story where it's like grizzled veteran of blank has to come out of retirement to blank, I'm in.
It was also one that had a big involved story that was not like an anime story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where it's not, it's still like emotionally melodramatic, but it was also someone who was an adult.
Yeah. Yeah, and you find it was, like, it was the first game I ever played, because, you know, like, probably for a lot of people, Resident Evil would occupy the kind of space that Metal Gear does for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you're playing the game, and you would kill these bosses who were, like, your enemies in the game. But then, actually, usually after you kill the boss, there'd be a cutscene, and then you would feel sort of bad for the boss that you'd just killed. And it was, like, this weird moral ambiguity. Because, you know, at different points, the character, Snake, acknowledges, like, well, I killed people, and they weren't necessarily bad people, but they had to die in order for my objective. It was them or me, so, and I killed them. But, you know, like, you kill this guy who has these psychic powers, who basically was like, you know, you kill him, and then you talk to him, and he just says, like, the world is horrible and ugly, and all that anyone has going in their mind is the desire to reproduce, and that's why I hate everyone. And you're just like, oh, this is like an unfortunate, tortured soul here.
Or the sniper who's like lost all of her family.
Yeah, all of her family was killed and all this stuff, and, you know, being a sniper was all she ever really knew. And you kill her, and then, you know, she's like sort of lamenting dying, but at the same time, whatever. Or there's even a later boss who's like a weird shaman type of character.
Right.
And I think he's the one where you kill him, and he's sort of like, you're fucked up. Like, I could tell there's something about, like, you have no soul, basically.
Right, there's something really wrong with you.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's really a strange game, because you do this thing, and you beat the boss, and the boss fights were pretty challenging, and you would win, but then you sort of don't win, because they tell you, like, well, you're a bad person, or they even make you feel bad, because sometimes they're like, don't feel bad about killing me, it's fine.
Yeah, like, they have a tragic backstory.
Yeah, and they're almost like, hey, you know, we fought you, and this is what we agreed to, is one of us would die, and it was me. So, shucks. And
right.
And you're like, now I feel like shit.
That it's not like a Bowser or something, where it's just out and out evil or something else. Yeah.
Or, you know, you defeat Bowser, and you're just like, whatever. I mean, he's not fucking, you don't stab him in the heart with a knife.
He's a dragon, too, so you don't feel bad. And there's, like, cartoony, like, oh no, my bridge is gone.
Yeah, or like an evil Ganon, where it's like, you kill him, and then he's gone, and it's like, look, no one on the planet is going to question that decision. But, you know, in this game, in the context, you're just sort of like, you know, I feel like these people were set on a really unfortunate path in their life, and they deserved better.
Yes.
It's a little bit like, have you played Shadow of the Colossus?
I have.
So in Shadow of the Colossus, I mean, it starts, it's, there's not a lot of explanatory stuff, but you're this sort of Link from Legend of Zelda type character. And you enter this big temple, and you've got a woman with you who seems to be dead. And you put her on this sort of altar, and this voice from above tells you, like, well, she could be brought back, but the only way to do it is if you kill these seven colossi. And it's fairly sinister. Like, the voice even says something like, this might not be a good idea to do.
Right.
And the character says something like, well, I don't give a fuck. I don't care what the consequences are. I'm doing it. So then you go fight these big monsters. But what's weird about it is, like, especially the first one you fight, it just kind of walks around until you attack it. Like, for the most part, you feel like you're killing these giant animals who really don't have any, they're not, like, coming after you. You know?
Like, they're just kind of around, or they're, like, asleep, or...
Yeah, and they're, like, these giant ancient creatures that you're destroying. And, you know, it's very, like, the whole time you're playing this game, you're like, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I might be making a very bad choice morally here. And that's, like, I think Metal Gear Solid is, you're a little bit like, well, obviously nuclear war is bad. But at the same time, boy, I really do not feel good about a lot of the things that are happening here.
I have to kill a lot of people to get to this point.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to feel bad for killing all of these people. Which I do think that game, or Metal Gear Solid, does well, and the other games do not do as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the only one I've played where I really felt like the story of that game is what pulled me through it in a lot of ways. And, you know, I played it through with, like, a tip book that you've had, because, like, this was in the day when you would buy a manual that showed you how to play the goddamn game.
Because some of the stuff in Metal Gear was still in an era where stuff was not always really well explained.
No, and it was hard. You wouldn't know what you were supposed to do sometimes.
Right.
Or how to do things, or... But anyway, I don't know. I think that's a great game, and if anyone can play that game, I would try it. I mean, it's going to be tough at first because the graphics aren't amazing, and... the controls probably aren't amazing by today's standards, but I think you can get an hour into it and then be into it or not. Unlike a lot of games that are like 8 hours.
It's also a game that's very different from a lot of games you play today or others, because there's no option when you're trying to shoot someone to go into a first person mode.
Yeah, no, it's all third person, sort of from above.
Yeah. So it's a game that rewards you sneaking around quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's up to a certain point in the game, it's really hard to get through it if you try to kill the people. Eventually, you can just, like, blow people away. But up to a certain point, it's, like, not possible.
But this is the first one, though, that, like, if you... Or one of the last ones in the series that if you fuck up the stealth, you could possibly fight your way out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can fight your way to somewhere else where you're, like, safe.
Right.
And start over. And that was the problem I had with the next game, Sons of Liberty, which we should probably just get into, I think.
Yeah. Did we ever explain the plot of Metal Gear Solid?
No, but I'll try and do it from memory, basically.
Okay.
So it's a little while after Metal Gear Solid 2, and or Metal Gear 2, Solid Snake. This is Metal Gear Solid 1. And there's like an uprising on this at this Alaskan base,
Shadow Moses,
where they are. Well, at the beginning of the game, you're going there to rescue some DARPA chief, and when you get there, you then discover that what's happening is they're trying to revive Metal Gear. And so then the plot goes on, and basically you find out they are trying to remake Metal Gear. You come across some old friends and some old enemies. And you also have this, this is an interesting part of it too. You have this other character, and it's this female character who's kind of like a new soldier type person. So it's interesting because that person probably expresses things the way a player would. In other words, like, at first the action is sort of exciting, and then the character Snake is explaining, like, that's not exciting, you just killed somebody. And you
know, I think that, like, to some degree, she's the character that the player wants to be.
Right.
Whereas the Otacon character is much more what the player's actually like.
Oh, yeah, there's also a huge Chinerd who is running around trying to do science things and is really annoying.
But he's pretty much what the player would be like if they were actually in that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
If a cyborg ninja came to try and kill me,
you'd pee your pants.
You know, and then, yeah, and someone tried to punch the cyborg ninja out.
Right.
I would pee my pants.
Yeah, like, there's
no, like, oh, I'd be pretty badass and brave. It's like, no, I'd pee my pants.
Yeah, and there's a great cyborg ninja, you know, which stretches the bounds of... Well, you know what I liked about that, too, is, like, this is something that comes up in games, is sort of like a cyborg space ninja or whatever. But what you get in Metal Gear Solid is the cyborg ninja that is very imperfect and kind of fucked up. Like, they have this sort of technology built into him, but he's also sort of in a RoboCop-esque way, like, struggling with his own memories and trying and, like, being a person, a human again. You know, but he's got a completely robotic body.
And that, well, that will come back later as well.
Yeah, and that character, too, like, when it shows up is very frightening. Because it's invisible, there's, like, a guy who's being impaled on a sword who's just suspended in the air. And then you find out it's this robot ninja. So anyway, you go through a bunch more stuff. You find out the guy behind this is Liquid Snake, who, if I remember correctly, is Snake's twin, basically, genetically engineered in a situation that's very similar to the motion picture twins, where they had one of the twins who was, like, perfect and one who was very imperfect. And, during the entire game, I think you're led to believe that Snake, the character you're playing, Solid Snake, is the perfect twin. And then in a post-credit sequence, you find out that he's actually the imperfect twin. You know, that's
He's the one that was supposed to be the imperfect twin.
Right. And meanwhile, throughout this entire thing, there's some kind of weird virus that's killing all of the people, the bad guys, and you. Because
Fox die.
Fox die. Yeah, and it's kind of like this genetic virus that is encoded in all of them. So they're also dying from that. So they're trying to find the cure for that, and that's kind of why they're doing this nuclear weapon bullshit. But, you know, you get to fight Metal Gear, blow it up, then you fist fight shirtless with the bad guy and make an escape on a Jeep and blow him up some more. It's great.
Which is the second shirtless sequence in the game.
Yeah.
That the first shirtless sequence is a torture sequence.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is a torture sequence. And here's what's kind of weird. This game also has these weird, you know, metagame elements. So, for example, in the torture sequence, you're getting tortured and it's like, tap circle as many times as you can. And that's like what keeps you from, you know, your life replenishes a tiny little bit every time you push circle. And it's being depleted when the bad guy tortures you. And if you tap it enough, you, like, win the torture, and then at the end of the game, this woman survives, and you guys ride off on a snowmobile. And then, when you start the game, if you play again, you have this bandana that gives you unlimited ammunition. However, if you lose the torture sequence, you save this nerd scientist guy, Otacon, at the end, but you get an invisibility cloak that you can then replay the game with, which makes it much easier.
Yes.
So anyway.
And it does it allows you to do the one of the immortal things that is probably the most fun in the game, like outside the game weirdness thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, there will be guards that will pee.
Yeah.
Like, they'll go to the bathroom and pee.
At a urinal.
And it'll pixelate out their penises, so that way you can't see them.
Right.
To indicate that they're peeing. You can stick some plastic explosives to their backs.
Right.
And they'll wander off, like, they'll look around, there's no one there.
Right.
And they'll wander off, and you can just blow them up.
Yeah, you have, like, a remote detonating explosive, and you put it on their back, and they go walking away. And you just wait as long as you can. Blow them up, the alarm sounds, everyone's running around like crazy, but they obviously don't know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's very crazy and fun, So that's Metal Gear Solid. I think that's a pretty good summary, probably, right?
Yeah.
So let's move on to the next game, Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty. Now this game starts. Now this game I've also played and finished. I had to play it on the easy mode because I got too frustrated. And this is something that I also found with, I was trying to play the game Dishonored, like this last week. And like, here's what I didn't like about it, and what I didn't like about Metal Gear Solid 2, is there's a lot of sneaking around, and that I'm okay with. But what I'm not okay with is sometimes you're like waiting, peeking around a corner for like, not even kidding, 2 minutes. Like you're just sitting there waiting. And that, to me, is very boring.
That you spend a lot of time peeking around the corner, and the idea is that you're supposed to figure out, like, when you can go.
Yeah, there's, like, a pattern to the way the guys or the guards are walking around.
And usually at some point, if you're waiting around for, like, 2 minutes, it usually means you've backed yourself into a corner, and you need to figure that out. But for the most part, in Metal Gear, you're supposed to just tranquilize somebody.
Right.
You know, like, shoot them with a tranquilizer gun and then run away.
Right.
Or, you know, move to another position or something else. But yeah, with Dishonored, that was a little less likely to happen.
Right.
And since you were in first person, you were like, yeah, but that game was one that was, of all the ones I've played, that one was the most unforgiving, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard, like, if you got caught to, you know, you would pretty much just die. I mean, you might as well reset the game.
They would show up with a, like, they would call in, they'd radio in other guys, which makes a lot more sense, narratively.
Yeah.
Like, if they said, hey, we found the guy, send backup.
Yeah, I mean, it was more realistic. They would send guys with, like,
bulletproof shields and shotguns.
Right.
And they'd send the attack squad in.
Yeah, I mean, there was no way, basically, if you got caught, there was almost no way that you would defeat the bad guys. And also, it was usually pretty difficult to actually even escape, and then, because here's what would happen in Metal Gear Solid. You'd kind of trip an alarm, and then you would run far enough away, and then hide somewhere, and it would be fine. But in Metal Gear Solid 2, that was almost impossible.
If you managed to get away, they would just replace the guards that you had already killed or knocked out.
Yeah.
So it's basically like they reset it.
Right. So in Metal Gear Solid 2, I mean, there's kind of a weird part at the beginning where you play as the same character from Metal Gear Solid, Snake, and you're sort of like some kind of weird, as I understand it, sort of environmental mercenary?
You're part of like an anti-Metal Gear group.
Yeah, okay.
Called Philanthropy.
Yeah.
And like the idea, you're sort of like a nuclear weapons protest group.
Right.
And you're recognized by the UN, but you're still a fringe group. Like, you're sort of like Greenpeace or the Earth Liberation Front.
Right. Now, here's one of my favorite parts of this, because this is revealed very early on. One of the bad guys you're fighting is Ocelot from the first game.
Yeah.
Who has his arm cut off by the cyborg ninja.
Mm-hmm.
So when he returns in this game, he has, it turns out he had Liquid Snake, the bad guy from the previous game. Liquid Snake's arm grafted onto his body, which is crazy enough. But then Liquid Snake's arm basically takes control of this Ocelot character and possesses him.
It's so bizarre because of all the corpses on that island.
Yeah.
Like, they decided, you know what? I'm going to go with Liquid Snake.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with this one very specific guy.
He probably had the most ripped arm, although he did have a horrible genetic disease.
Yeah, like, but it seems kind of, if you were just going to grab a guy's arm, there's a whole bunch of corpses all the way. Just be like, I'll just take this guy's arm. It's good enough.
Well, not to mention you're a ruthless killer. So how much trouble would you have just lining up a bunch of guys and be like, this guy's arm looks pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take this one.
I mean, assuming a complete arms graft is possible. But then also it's like that weird Simpsons, which I think is based on a horror movie where Homer gets Snake's hair grafted onto him and then becomes Snake.
Yeah, like if you get the right, you know, or the wrong organ transplanted, you become that person.
There's something essential about this guy's arm that then becomes part of you. So anyway, the first part, you know, is a very brief thing. So then you're moved into the second part where you play as this character, Raiden, which is
basically
if you took Snake but made him complain about everything. Also, correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the one where you could see that Raiden has what I'm going to call visible panty line?
Yes.
The entire game?
To some degree, like, I almost think of Raiden as the complete opposite in every way of Snake.
Yeah.
In that if you went to the character designer and said, okay, here's what Solid Snake looks like, a grizzled,
right,
super macho man.
Yeah.
It's like, make him still a man, but completely the opposite in every way.
Right.
So they gave him, like, long, blonde, flowing hair.
Right. Yeah, someone really animated the shit out of his hair.
Yeah. And they made it look as much like a stereotypical anime character as you could.
He did seem very anime. That is true.
And what's interesting about this is that when they released the demo for this game, you played a Snake the whole time.
Yeah.
But then you bought the game, and it doesn't show any pictures of Raiden.
Right.
It doesn't have anything on the back with Raiden in it, so it's a complete surprise.
Right.
So everyone who picks up this game is like, okay, when am I going to play as a Solid Snake?
Right.
And you don't.
Right, yeah. You play as him for probably what was the demo at the beginning. It almost feels like they on purpose were like, let's include this Snake chapter so that can be the demo. And then we'll pull the old switcheroo. Well, and here's the other thing is like where Snake was the sort of more stoic, you know, whatever soldier guy, Raiden is like complaining and you have a radio. This is like a big part of these games is you communicate via radio. And for some reason, his girlfriend is on the radio with you all the time and like telling you like, boy, I sure hope you're back in time for our anniversary.
Oh yeah, this is another weird female character where she's like a nagging girlfriend.
Yeah, and she's just sort of keeps saying like, hey, I hope you make it back for your anniversary. And like the whole time you're playing the game, you're like, I am being killed repeatedly. It's, like, this is no time to discuss that.
Yeah, it's like if someone is in the middle of a sneaking mission of a national security importance, it's like, we could wait to talk about this.
Yeah, and furthermore, I don't understand why, if I was sending some guy in to do some crazy clandestine shit, and the fight of his life, the last thing I'd do is put on the radio and be like, yeah, we can have his girlfriend also be there. That seems like a good idea.
It was unclear why she was there, and it was also that, yeah, it was unclear why she was there. It was also unclear that nobody says to her, like, listen, he's got stuff to do.
Right.
Like, let's not talk about our anniversary or let's not talk about our relationship. Like you need, or someone says in the middle of the game, like, okay, let's change jobs.
Right.
Let's change this.
Now, okay. So you're on this, thing called the Big Shell.
Yes.
And you're kind of just running around. You're infiltrating it, to rescue some hostages, which includes the president. And, there's a terrorist group called the Sons of Liberty, and their leader claims that he is Solid Snake. And they are backed up by the rogue anti-terror training unit Dead Cell, who are also threatening to destroy the facility. So they send in a SEAL team, and they're all killed, except for one who just calls himself Iroquois Plissken, and who is suspiciously similar to Solid Snake. And then, of course, you eventually find out it is Solid Snake. So you got to go fight these guys. So first you have to disable these explosives, which is, if I remember this correctly, for some reason, there's some guy on the boat who's like an explosive expert. Like this, oh, he was brought there with the SEAL team, like this old man.
This old crippled guy.
Yeah, he's got a cane. So, you know, he has to tell you what to do, but he can't actually do it.
They had somebody, very for plot convenience reasons.
Exactly.
And it gets even more plot convenient because they bring a crippled guy.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't have him just go and do this.
Right.
You know, like go deal with the explosives.
Right.
But then at a certain later point when you're trying to find the explosives and deal with them.
Yeah.
It turns out that he's not crippled at all.
No.
Like.
No, he like tells you this whole story about how he has a fake leg. And mm-hmm. I think he says it's got something to do with like he botched a job where he was trying to save somebody from like a bomb that was exploding.
Yeah, and that he crippled himself.
Yeah, you know, because the bomb went off, killed some kid or something, and he lost his leg. And then that right. turns out to just be complete bullshit.
Yeah, it's and he said like it was because like he wasn't actually crippled, but he felt like he was sort of psychologically crippled, or it was a yeah. punishment or something.
Yes.
And so, I mean, for our purposes, he was crippled for the convenience of the plot.
Right.
Yeah. That they needed a way to sort of, like, uncripple him at one point, so that way the plot can move forward.
Right. Right. They're like, well, shit, now we need him not to be crippled. So you fight the first boss, who is Fat Man.
Yes.
Now, Fat Man, as I recall, is a bomb guy who's in a bomb suit, one of those like big Hurt Locker suits.
Yeah, big bomb resistant suit.
With no helmet though.
Yeah, no.
And he's placing bombs around, and he's particularly hard to catch because he's on rollerblades.
Yes.
So he's this big fat guy who calls himself Fat Man, rollerblading around placing these bombs that you have to like defuse, you know, and then you also try and shoot him in the face.
There's also a nice touch that when he's introduced, he has a wine glass.
Oh, yeah.
Like a wine goblet with a big straw on it.
Yeah.
So he can drink his wine without having to, like, take off his bomb suit.
Right. Yeah, so he's got this decadent wine glass with a straw in it because he's in this crazy-ass suit. And you're just like... It was the most bizarre boss fight, and this is like basically the first boss fight of the game.
Yes.
I mean, this is like the big first thing, you know, in the previous game, it was the Revolver Ocelot fight, and it was, you know, interesting because you're running around this room and there's a guy in the center who's hostage and you can't rescue him because he's all tied up with explosives. And then in this one, you have more explosives, but it's a rollerblading obese man who drinking wine from a straw. Then you move on and, you know, you run around a lot in a fairly small area. You also fight a guy named Vamp, who is apparently a vampire.
Yeah. This is where, like, Metal Gear Solid had, like, sympathetic bosses.
Right.
This one had, like, they're all terrible people.
They're evil assholes. And,
Yeah, Fat Man is a total dick.
Yeah.
Like, he's a weirdo and he's a dick. Vamp is a goddamn vampire.
Right. Like, the evil kind, too. Like, yeah, not a Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt vampire. Like, evil asshole vampire.
He's like Bela Lugosi vampire.
Yeah, except shirtless, ripped version. But, you know, where he's just, like, killing people. And it's, like, not clear. Like, no, it seems like they don't explicitly say he's a vampire, right?
Now, I want to talk about the homoerotic aspects of this character.
Yeah, sure.
But first, it's worth referencing something that happens plot-wise beforehand.
Uh-huh.
Where when you rescue, I think it's the president.
Yeah.
And he encounters Raiden for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he taps him on the dick.
Yeah. Gives him a little, like good on ya.
Like, characters, like, tap Raiden's balls to see that he's a guy.
Right.
They're like, are you a man? And
yeah.
Just, like, go and punt, like, they gotta tap his balls to see, like, is there, like, what's there?
Yeah, they, like, just take a reach for the genitals to confirm his, you know, male-female status. Well, and it's extra weird, because you're like, on the one hand, I understand these sort of conceits of anime where there's these gender ambiguous characters.
Right.
But my understanding is it usually seems that the characters can immediately identify each other as male or female.
Yeah, like they figure it out.
Yeah, they know, and they don't usually have that discussion of like, hey, are you a dude or are you a chick? I can't tell, and I have a hard time telling 90% of the time.
That usually, like, narratively, you don't want to call attention to your design choices.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you don't want to call attention to the fact that you're like, this character is sort of gender ambiguous in a way, even though you, at this point, you've been playing this game for like 2 fucking hours.
And it's the, you've just pulled this guy out of a hostage situation. Like, yeah. he's been blindfolded and trapped in a room, you know. Or, like, that's the one where you have to, like, rescue him by a crazy rocket, like, navigating a rocket through a vent.
Oh, yes.
And you have to rescue him this way, and the first thing he does is tap you in the dick.
I know.
Like, that's his first reaction. It is the president. Like, the first thing he does is just tap you in the dick to see that you're a guy.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing of a higher priority going on.
Than figuring out if this character is male or female.
Right.
It's like, all right, well, he's got a dick, so next thing, let's get the fuck out of here.
Right.
So then there's Vamp, who you fight and kill. He's a vampire, but I think they don't actually ever say he's a vampire.
They imply that he's a vampire, and they also seem to imply that he's kind of gay.
They imply it in every possible way. He has fangs, he drinks blood, he kind of disappears.
Right.
But, you know, and he, like, gets shot a bunch of times and then just gets back up.
He gets thrown into the water that you're not supposed to be able to get out of.
Right.
But then he gets out of it.
Right. Yeah, it's a pool that's, like, so deep or rushing so quickly that you can't escape if you fall in. But right. He does. So you're like, okay, well, he must be super. I mean, that's a pretty good test of vampirism is, let's throw someone in a pool that a normal person could not escape from that's in this thing for some fucking reason.
He could also sprint across water.
Yeah, he can run across the water. I mean, they say every possible vampiric quality, plus they add a few of their own, and yet never actually say he's a vampire, which is weird.
Right.
There's also Fortune, which is this woman, you shoot bullets at her, and they just, like, crazily change direction and won't hit her.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's her, like, superpower. Like, this is the thing. In Metal Gear Solid, all of the bad guys had sort of a vague superpower. But really, the way they would fight you was not so much with the superpower, possibly with the exception of the one psychic character.
One psychic character basically was the only one who had what you could define as a superpower.
Yeah, I mean, the rest had these sort of, like, vague combat acuities that could be attributed to sort of the mystical realm, but not really. I mean,
They were sort of like, they were action movie, you know, superpowers, yeah. Where they're not, like, human beings, but they're just extensions, you know, they're sort of, like, slightly unrealistic. But this one is where people have superpowers.
Yeah, they're literally superpowered. And it's weird, it becomes a difficult thing for me playing, because, like, in the first one, I really enjoyed the different characters, even though there's not a ton to them. But, you know, anytime the character, like, the one character who had superpowers, that was, like, a big deal.
Right.
And then in this one, it's sort of like, it's that weird reality problem where you're like, no one's going to mention that this character is a vampire. Like, everyone else is fine with this.
They all show up and everyone's okay with the vampire. Everyone's okay with the woman who cannot be killed by bullets.
Yeah, and this woman is, like, you know, a soldier of fortune, and no one's heard of her.
Yeah. It's like a bizarre, it seems too stupid.
Exactly. So, anyway, you run around a lot, you do this stuff. I didn't find it nearly as fun as the first one. I think that what I found fun about it was basically the ways in which it was a shadow of the first game. In other words, it was kind of me laying on top of that game. What happened? Oh, also, towards the end, things get really insane. So it turns out that the colonel you've been talking to on the radio is a, like, supercomputer. And it starts telling you things like, why don't you shut off the game right now? And stuff like that. And you fight in, like, this weird simulated environment and all this shit. And then you fight a guy, like, on the roof of, what, Federal Hall, whatever that is.
Well, I want to stop and go back one, you know, for a little bit here, because you're missing a very important sequence in this one.
Okay.
Which is when you're running around totally naked.
Oh, yeah, there's a part where you, sort of a hallmark of this game is you'll get tortured or something, and you lose all this stuff you've accumulated.
Right, you lose all your equipment.
But in this one, you're running down this, like, long corridor, literally completely naked. Like, covering up your junk with your hands as you run. And
the first thing you do, and one of the moves you have is, like, this weird, like, normally with Snake, you have this combat roll.
Yeah.
But with Raiden, you have a sort of flip where you do the splits as you're going through the air.
Yeah, I would call it sort of like a handless cartwheel.
Yeah. And of course, the first thing you do when you're totally nude.
Yeah.
Is as a young man, you're sort of half intrigued and half horrified of what's going to come out when you do this cartwheel.
Right.
Because you're like, I'm going to see a guy scrote.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm going to see this guy spread butthole.
Right.
Which doesn't quite occur.
No.
But you can still do the cartwheel.
Yeah, it's very strange. And like, they somehow avoid, you don't actually see any nudity, really.
No. But like, it's a thing where you're standing against a box to sort of peer around, but you see him like holding his balls.
Yeah.
And yeah. Holding his junk, where I feel like it's again that ludonarrative dissonance thing, but I feel like if you were running for your life,
yeah, exactly.
You'd pump your arms.
Yeah, I would probably use my arms. I wouldn't be like, well, I have to cover my balls. Because there's guys patrolling this corridor, so you have to just run past them, basically. And, you know, so you're completely naked, and, like, he refuses to move his arms from his genitals. And you're like, well, that's real combat hardened. You know what I mean? Because you're like, these guys are going to fucking shoot you. I think you better use whatever tools you've got. Like, if you get shot with your dick out or covering your dick, who cares?
Or, like, yeah, like, it gives you a chance. Or, I remember reading Guests of the Ayatollah, a book by Mark Bowden. Really good book.
Uh-huh.
And they were talking about people who are being held in Iran, like some of the hostages in the embassy.
Sure.
And one guy's actual plan was he would always sleep nude.
Uh-huh.
Under the idea that if he had to escape, like, all of a sudden, his plan was basically, like, if he were naked, that would catch the very conservative Muslim guards by surprise.
Yeah.
And he'd have, like, a little bit more time to not get shot or to get away.
Yeah.
Like he kind of thought the shock, and maybe it wouldn't work, but in that sort of desperate situation, you're like, I'll take the 3 seconds between life and death.
Sure, he's like, I'll take any edge, any possible edge. Right. Yeah, no, I could see that, because, like, if I was there and I was a guard, and it was like, let's go get this guy and shoot him, and I went in and he just made a break for it and he was completely naked, I think I might hesitate for whatever for a half second.
Like, it gives you just enough. Like, that's his plan, was, like, just enough. Just enough to get away.
Yeah.
Just enough to, like, rush the guard.
Right.
Just enough to get out.
Right. Well, yeah, if you're trying to build any edge. Well, here's what's weird about it in the game. There's really no reason for you to be 100% naked. Like, you could easily have boxer shorts on.
It implies that he was totally nude under the suit they sent him in.
Yeah, which is crazy, because you see his underpants outlined in his suit the whole game. Because you're sort of behind him and above, so you see his butt all the time. And you see his underpants through his sneaking suit or whatever. So it's like, hey, I know you had underpants. What happened to those?
Yeah, you could put those on, or they could put those on you while they're torturing you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it breaks the reality of the game, because you're like, look, I know in real life maybe they would get this guy naked and torture him, but it just seems silly. Because when you're deciding the story, whatever.
But after this point, it breaks the reality of the game even further.
Yeah, because then the game itself starts telling you, like, why don't you turn off the game? And, like, it goes into this whole psychological thing of, like, why do we play games of violence and all this shit?
It shows you clips from the original Metal Gear Solid. Yeah. And it also will have a thing that pretends, like, the game over screen.
Yeah.
when it's not really the game over screen.
Right. Yeah. There's a screen that comes up when you die that's mm-hmm. pretty noticeable, and that'll just come up while you're playing. But then, you know, you just have to continue because you're not, the game's not over. It's just the game is tricking you into turning off the game.
Yeah. Snake shows up to help you out in one of the final little confrontations.
Yeah.
Before you go into the virtual world. And you ask him, like, he gives you a goddamn sword.
Yeah.
And he has a gun. And you ask him, like, why can't, you know, do you need any ammo? Like, are you going to be okay? And he points to a bandana that he's wearing, and he says, infinite ammo.
Yeah. And you're just like, okay.
Okay, here. And you're like, all right, I understand this from the last one, and I understand that we're playing a video game. Everyone in the game knows we're playing a game now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like everyone's now winking at the camera.
Yeah, and that's a point where I felt like, okay, I don't need this much winking at the camera. Like, I don't feel like I'm invested in this. And it's like, I try to think about this when this happens. This very rarely happens in a movie.
Hmm.
But I go see plays, and you don't see plays very often.
Not anymore.
But I would say the worst plays, like always the worst plays, are the plays where everyone's winking to the audience and saying that this is a play.
Yeah, and it's that, like, aren't we clever?
Yeah, and it's like, that's never clever, because usually, like, I saw a play, I think I talked about this once on the podcast, but I saw a play called Porno Zombies.
Uh-huh.
Which had very little porno and very little zombie in it.
Great.
And the problem with it was that it was a script designed to be very aware that it's a play the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to be, like, when I read the program, it's supposed to be sort of a bad community theater play doing this play.
Right.
Like, it's sort of a play within a play. But it's done badly enough that it was unclear what they were doing.
Right.
And at time, like, in the middle of the, like, the second half, the script just totally devolves and breaks down.
Right.
And there's still, like, 30 or 40 minutes left.
Right.
Which this game suffers from the same problem of they're all winking at the audience at this point. It's all a sham. But that's not where they end. That's just like, okay, and then we have the last final confrontation for the whole plot.
Yeah. You still have this big boss fight where you fight this guy, and it's like, here's what's frustrating about it to me. This is like what I call the Super Mario 2 dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
If you beat the Super Mario 2 game, it ends famously with, it was all a dream. And, like, the problem I have with that, besides it being stupid, is that, in theory, then, if you die, it doesn't matter, right? Because it was still all a dream.
Is that makes every action meaningless.
Yeah, and so what they do is they, like, cast off any meaning to this game, and then be like, actually, but you better believe in it for, like, another 15 minutes.
In that, if you had died in this dream all along,
yeah,
you know, it's not like a Nightmare of an Elm Street thing where they establish a rule that if you die in the dream, you die in real life.
No, it's literally like you finish the game and Mario's like, what a horrible nightmare that was. And
right.
If you don't if you die before you finish, it's just like game over. You're dead.
You just don't see that it was a dream.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that doesn't work because that's crazy. And this game's the same thing, because it's like, hey, don't tell me that none of this matters, and then be like, well, but then forget that and finish this other part.
That you're sort of in the middle of this hopeless virtual reality scenario that you can't win.
Right.
And then you get out of the virtual reality scenario, which had to be hurriedly changed, and was also very tonally weird, because this game came out, like, there's a lot of sequences in this one where you're fighting the final boss in New York.
Yeah, like a Wall Street type of thing.
Wall Street on top of Federal Hall. And since this came out so close to 9/11,
yeah,
the idea of, like, a destroyed New York was not as absurd and comical anymore.
Well, and it also kind of ends with this long cutscene that I can't honestly say I fully understood, but it was very conspiracy heavy.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it basically goes back to, like, the founding fathers and shit.
Or, like, the spirit of America comes out from underneath the White House.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like it might as well end with like the ghost of George Washington being like, oh, we set these wheels in motion long ago. And right. And I think if I remember correctly, there's like money raining from the sky.
Because apparently that was the thing that was strange too, of like when you had it crashes into Wall Street, it crashes into one of the federal buildings.
Yeah.
Or something. And or like right where that statue of George Washington is.
Right.
And money is just falling from the sky as if like Wall Street runs on paper money and it's all just hanging out there.
Right.
Which was also, you know, which is eerily reminiscent of 9/11, where there are people reporting just papers being everywhere.
Right.
You know, after, and that's part of what makes that game really bizarre, is that they had set up this thing to be sort of absurd.
Yeah.
But none of this would really happen, and then it winds up being eerily close.
Yeah, right.
And so that's why a lot of, you know, versions of this game, that was heavily truncated.
Yeah, actually, there's a whole section here about plot changes, and some of them are kind of interesting. There were some other characters. There was an Asian woman who's saved the game, kind of like on the first game. There were a bunch of different characters. Interesting, there was a character named Chinaman, who was originally planned to be included as a villain and later on omitted, and his ability is incorporated in Vamp, namely the ability to walk on water and walls. Chinaman would have movements modeled after Jet Li and have body tattoo of a dragon that would come alive as soon as he dove into water. And then also, significant changes to the game's ending were made in development following the September 11th attacks on New York, where the finale occurs. A sequence depicting Arsenal Gear's displacement of the Statue of Liberty and crashing through half of Manhattan was removed, as was a short coda to appear after the credits, a breaking news cast showing the Statue of Liberty's new resting place, Ellis Island. At the point where Solidus dies, Raiden was supposed to have cut the rope on Federal Hall's flagpole, causing an American flag to fall over Solidus's body, which is awesome, and American flags that were supposed to be on all the flagpoles in New York were removed from the title. More recently, Kojima revealed that the name Raiden was spelled in kanji rather than in katakana due to the latter form of the name resembling Bin Laden in Japanese. I mean, here's the thing. I understand there's a 9/11 sensitivity, and especially at this time.
Right.
However, like, there's a certain extent to which it's like, okay, you see a Transformers and they're fighting in Chicago and they're destroying buildings and shit. Or you see a Godzilla and it's like, I understand that people don't want reminiscence of 9/11. But like, you know, for example, crashing into the Statue of Liberty. I mean, that's a little bit like I saw Ghostbusters 2. They moved the Statue of Liberty and crushed a bunch of stuff. It was too much. You know, and it's like, come on.
I think that part of it is that this game was released very close after 9/11. Like, this was released in, I think, in, like, October of 2001.
Yeah.
And so, like, I agree with what you're saying, but I think it was so close.
I get it.
Like,
I just,
it was within, like, it was within a couple of months.
But, like, cutting the flag and the flag falls on him, I mean, that's pretty amazing, right?
I think that was something that might have just been cut out of sensitivity, uh-huh. You know, oversensitivity, but that seems so tonally ridiculous.
Right.
Which is part of the thing with the other stuff, which was supposed to be tonally ridiculous, but then comes out across as not as ridiculous as it seems.
Right.
And so that's part of why that has to get cut, is that we're trying to establish an absurd over-the-top tone, and it's no longer absurd or over-the-top.
Yeah.
So you have to cut out some stuff. I mean, it's not as if they, like, it's not like the Spider-Man thing where the original fight was at the World Trade Center, which is no longer there.
Sure.
And you cut that for obvious reasons of, like, it makes no sense in our reality anymore, and way too, like, obviously you don't reference that.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, having it, like, the American flag fall on top of the... And I think we have not given much credence to Solidus Snake.
Yeah.
who was the goddamn former president of the United States.
Oh yeah, that's important, by the way. He was somehow was the president, and he like bio enhanced himself with these crazy ass octopus tentacles.
Which is so, like, I think about the fact that the news heavily covered when George W. Bush took painting classes.
Yeah, like recently.
It's something that if George W. Bush does anything, like anything of mild interest, it gets in the news. It gets heavily reported.
Yeah, I mean, and so, if he had octopus arms grafted onto him, there's no way.
That Bill Clinton is probably, there's a camera like filming Bill Clinton pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's the thing when you're president, like someone, you never get to take a piss by yourself again.
I mean, imagine if Bill Clinton, you know, you heard this news story and it turned out Bill Clinton had had like a robotic gun, a robot grenade launcher arm put on instead of his flesh arm. Like, how fucking crazy would that be?
It was like when he had a heart attack, every newspaper reported it as if it were like it's breaking news. It's super important.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you would just disappear for a while and bio enhance yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and then come back and like some, no one like said, yeah, we're going to like, no AP reporters. Like where did the former president go?
You know, I did just see this story that was like Kim Jong-un has been missing for a little bit.
Yeah.
Has been conspicuously absent. And so this makes me wonder now. I'm like, oh fuck. Is he going to come back with like robot eyes or something?
He's going to come back with robo tentacles.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, is like, there are certain things that I understand are sensitive. Yeah, I'll give this example. There's one of the great Simpsons episode is when Homer parks his car, or Homer gets his car stolen.
Right.
And it's parked in between the World Trade Center towers.
Oh, when Barney takes it, like, Barney goes on a bender.
Yes.
Like a super bender, and takes his car, and it winds up in New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, he goes there to retrieve the car, and there's, you know, that's the famous Crab Kalesh, Crab Juice, Mountain Dew.
Right.
Good times are had by all. And they didn't show this for, like, several years after the 9/11 attacks. And it was just sort of like, I don't know, man. This is, like, a silly enough context that I think it's, like, after a pretty short time, we should be okay with this. And if you're not, that's cool, but you should recognize this. It's a little bit like, you know, let's say that I had a real emotional experience with Total Eclipse of the Heart, the song.
Right.
Like, how much of the world is expected to stop because I can't handle that? Or should I just learn to accept, hey, I got a thing with this, and it's going to come up in some pretty fucking silly moments, and that's on me.
I think that's also strange that now that Simpsons episode would be hard to show.
Yeah.
Because it's so dated.
Sure.
And that's part of the thing is that, you know, sometimes when they show Simpsons reruns, they try to show the ones, like, they're all kind of dated.
Uh-huh.
But you want to show the ones that are a little bit, like, you could feel like they were not made, you know, they might have been made, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Or it's, like, not entirely clear, where this one was clearly made more than 10 years ago.
Right.
And so it seems like the people, like, you know, you and me will remember this episode.
Right.
And someone who's honestly, you know, after that sort of 9/11 period, they have no recollection of this episode.
Right.
So it seems really foreign to a large group of, you know, likely Simpsons viewers.
Right, exactly.
They've never seen the show before, and then having the World Trade Center, which they have limited familiarity with.
Yeah.
You know, is really, I mean, because someone who is 18 now was like 4 or 5 when that happened.
Sure.
So that's part of, like, I think that, you know, in 2006 or 2007, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, like, I could see why they don't show that episode or anything with the World Trade Center, because it seems really old.
I guess, but I mean, I feel a little like, just because, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I think that people should get away from this thing of, like, if something is of a time, it's bad, you know, like.
No, I think with, I would want to see a version of Metal Gear Solid 2 where you do crush him with an American flag.
Yeah, and, like, I think the crazy, that's how I feel about the Simpsons episode, and this is like the craziness of it sort of overrides to me the like, well, I don't know, I guess, and at the time I understand, but they should just release a director's cut with the original shit. The reason being, like, I think at some point you have to say, okay, obviously I can't show someone blowing up the Twin Towers or crashing a plane into the Twin Towers.
Right.
But can I watch someone pilot this, like, crazy-ass mech device that's meant to launch nuclear weapons, and it sort of nicks the Statue of Liberty and knocks it over?
And considering that, like, the Godzilla trailer has shown, like, a, you know, destroyed Statue of Liberty, even though that didn't even take place in New York at all.
Yeah.
Like, we've destroyed the Statue of Liberty since, so we're fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're good. At some point, I think the Statue of Limitations has run in terms of, I think we can show, like, buildings being destroyed by shit.
We've blown up the White House twice.
Yeah.
Two different movies, same summer.
Right.
So, I would like, and plus, it's that sequence of, the Simpsons episode makes no reference to 9/11. It clearly took place beforehand.
Yeah, like, way, like, 10 way years before,
no
maybe?
Connection. This one is also so absurd, where you're fighting the former president who bodily modified himself to give himself, like, octopus tentacles.
Right.
Like, cybernetic octopus tentacles.
Yeah.
Then you're going to crush him to death with an American flag.
Yeah, I mean, I think, if anything, the only issue is they have to just make sure that they're, like, that people know that this is not a commentary on 9/11. Like, there's not some subtext here, because these games deal in a lot of subtext.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the problem that Metal Gear has, is that they have so much conspiracy-laden stuff.
Yeah.
That it's hard for them to back away from other people's conspiracy-laden stuff.
And that's what I think is, like, so weird about the end of this game, too. It feels a little bit to me like conspiracy, but not the fun X-Files kind, but the shitty National Treasure kind.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, boy, this conspiracy seems weird that anyone would do this, and also kind of stupid, and also it just seems odd to me that, like, oh, you found this crazy treasure room hidden under the White House. It's like no one would have found that on accident when they were putting in a gas line or something. Give me a fucking break.
Like, at some point, I mean, there's a conspiracy to steal or to get control of a giant nuclear walking battle tank.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a totally sufficient reason to have a conspiracy.
Right.
Is to get control of this nuclear walking battle tank. And you could stop there.
Yeah.
You know, that's enough. But as opposed to, like, this thing to control this device that's supposedly the spirit of America, or like the secret organization.
Right.
It just becomes too much.
Exactly.
And there's a big lot, like, this game ends with a lot of big text dumps, and it's trying to,
yes,
your girlfriend turns out to have betrayed you, but then not betrayed you because, yes, like, it turns out that she has a baby and there's a hostage, and it's like it just tried to do way, like, it tried to wrap up all right. This stuff really quickly, too.
Yeah, I mean, in the last 15 minutes, or the last half hour, it feels like that game has a bunch of shit going on, and they just are like, well, if they make it to the end of the game, I guess we'll worry about the story.
I have a theory about this.
Okay.
Is that Hideo Kojima, the guy who made the game, he had a whole bunch, like, he had a whole bunch of shit he wanted to do.
Right.
And someone at Konami had said, look, you're going to fuck over all the players when you pull this fast one by not having Snake in it.
Yeah.
You might not get another game.
Yeah.
Like, that might not occur.
Right.
So you have to insert, like, so you just jammed everything in.
Right.
Like, thinking that this might be the last one.
Right.
And that's my theory as to why, like, there's a big text dump at the end.
Yeah.
That he kind of ran out of time or money to do all the stuff he wanted to do.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, if, like, maybe with the, because Snake kind of pops up again at the end, you know, if the purpose of that is to sort of be like, oh, well, as a player, maybe now I think, oh, maybe Snake will be in the next one.
Right.
You know, it might get me going through to the next one. But also, like, I feel like there was something they could have done the whole idea of this sort of like meta game, I guess, where everything is just sort of strange and whatever, is semi appealing, but it seems like they decided to do that, you know, halfway through. Like, they hadn't even made that decision until it was way too late.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just isn't happening.
And for those of you who are not playing the games in the chronological game order, but, like, the order that they came out...
Yeah.
There's a marked difference between this one and Metal Gear Solid 3, which is really restrained by comparison.
Yes.
Like, they made something much more straightforward and direct. Because I think there was a lot of fan backlash against this game. Like, a lot.
Yeah, the Metal Gear Solid 3, they kind of went back to probably Metal Gear Solid kind of ideas. And maybe right. even a little less.
They decided that the sort of fucking with the audience pieces...
Yeah.
That was really way reduced.
Yeah, and I think that might be why they did a prequel as well. It was because, like, that... They were like, well, shit, how do we put this cat back in the bag?
Well, Metal Gear Solid 4 is a, you know, is a sequel.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if we're talking about, because I haven't played that one.
That's Guns of the Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could, except for you haven't played it, and also, we're at about 2 hours.
Right. So I think that's something that maybe for another day...
Yeah.
Or if, like, there's a big fan demand for it. But
sure.
That one was one where they basically had to try and wrap up the whole series.
Right.
And but you can see why with more recent games, they're going back to the earlier well.
Yeah.
Because they've kind of really fucked over the series and really made some weird changes and tried to do some different things. But they went way too... It's a hard part when they've gone so absurd.
Right.
To bring it back.
Right. Yeah, I think so. I think they've... I don't know.
It's as if in Star Wars Episode 2 they made Spaceballs instead.
I just watched like a half hour of Spaceballs the other night.
Yeah.
It's pretty not bad. I mean, I saw that movie about 400 times when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that movie is perfect as long as you can accept like, oh, this is a dumb movie, right? Like, this is going to be really stupid. Like... If you can enjoy the fact that Mel Brooks is allowed to make these so stupid jokes.
You don't have to worry about the story. Like, the story is a vehicle for jokes.
Yeah, the story is the point. I think that the reason Spaceballs works for me, you know, it's a parody.
Right.
So, you know, and you can tell in Spaceballs that as a parody, it basically relies heavily on, like, okay, everyone's seen fucking Star Wars. That way we don't have to do a story. They just say, like, well, just imagine Star Wars, but everything's stupid.
And there's, like, the jokes are constructed things, like the bit about assholes.
Yeah.
Requires no knowledge of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely none.
No.
Where it's the... And that's still funny if you haven't seen Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need the source material for that.
Well, like, there's this part in Spaceballs that I just felt was, like... an example of how they just wanted to do the joke. So they, you know, have this whole sequence of events where all this dumb shit happens, and then they lose the characters they're tracking, the bad guys.
Yeah.
So they go over to this wall where they've got Spaceballs the movie on VHS, and they watch what happened so they can see where the good guys went. And I think they entirely do that because it's so funny to watch the action sequence before happened in fast motion.
Right.
I think that's literally constructed this huge setup and this crazy scene that doesn't even really work because you're like, trust me, when you see Rick Moranis yelling at everyone in fast motion with a high-pitched voice and then flying into a control panel, it'll be worth it.
And it's like, or when they get near to the end of the movie and they have the whole thing like, no, that was then. Now we're watching now.
Yes.
We're watching now, now.
Yes.
And where he's trying to explain that, like, the timeline to him.
Yeah.
And how the major character knows any of this.
Yeah, it makes no fucking sense.
Like, there's no way he would know that, but it's a clever scene, and which is a, you know, part of what makes it work is there's a stupid thing, and then a really clever thing. and then they have the thing that moves along the plot.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting. I just was like, man, they were willing to go really far. Like, whoever pitched that scene,
right?
That must have been a tough pitch.
And that's the difference between Spaceballs and Metal Gear.
Yeah,
is that Spaceballs is a screwball parody comedy,
right?
And Metal Gear, at times, as a series, will have screwball references to the fact that it's a video game. Then serious Cold War debates about, and like serious debates about the nature of war or being a child soldier.
Yes.
And what that's like. And also, you know, child sexual torture.
Right, as discussed in the last one.
As discussed in the last episode. And this is all, like, and sometimes these can be in the same series or even in the same game.
Exactly.
And so it's a tone, like an really inconsistent tone.
Yeah, it wants to have it both ways.
Like, Spaceballs is a comedy all the way through.
Right.
And you can't mix screwball comedy and high drama.
No. No, it doesn't really work.
No.
Well, I think we've done it.
I think so.
Thank you for calling in again.
Yeah, that it was fun.
Good. Well, perhaps we'll have, you know, some other video game updates for you in the near future.
Yeah, that seems to
come up with some crazy-ass thing.
And you know that the Skype mostly works.
Yeah, this actually kind of worked. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Helpful Snowman. You know where to find it. It's Helpful Snowman at everything. If you're listening to this and you're interested, my brother does host a video game club on Facebook, where we basically play video. It's like a book club, but video games. I'll just explain it that way. And we get together online and talk about it. So if you're interested in that and you're not in it, let me know, because it's fun and you could probably be in it.
Yep.
Cool. We'll see you next time.